Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Judge Bruce Schroeder, he's the presiding judge in the Kyle Rittenhouse case, made some off-the-cuff remarks during a hearing on for the latest motion to dismiss, for a mistrial from the defense over a discrepancy on video evidence that the prosecution presented at trial, but a different version was given to the defense, and they claimed that it would have changed how they approached handling that evidence during the trial. But listen to Judge Schroeder on the media's role in the Rittenhouse trial.
We're there in part, not fully, but in part, because of grossly irresponsible handling of what comes out of this trial. I will tell you this. I'm going to think long and hard about live television of a trial again next time. I don't know. I've always been a firm believer in it because I think the people should be able to see what's going on. But when I see what's being done, it's really quite frightening. Frightening, that's the right word for it.
Yeah, because the media is going after him, too, from his ringtone to the fact that, you know, he had Rittenhouse pick the jurors out of a box, which is what they do in Wisconsin.
The claim being made by the media leftists is that if Rittenhouse is acquitted, it's because the judge was in the tank for the defense. That's the sum total of it. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined again by William Jacobson. He's a clinical professor of law and director of the Securities Law Clinic at Cornell Law School. He's also the founder of the excellent blog LegalInsurrection.com, and he's president of the Legal Insurrection Foundation. Professor Jacobson, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me on.
What about what Judge Schroeder had to say about, he didn't get into too much detail, you have, the media's role in how the public understands this trial?
Well, it's similar to so many other cases. The media immediately sets a narrative which is hostile to the defendant in a highly politicized case. Happened in the George Zimmerman case, has happened in multiple cases. And you can't get rid of that narrative. So the narrative is Kyle Rittenhouse is a militia member who crossed state lines with a weapon to shoot peaceful protesters. None of those things are true, other than he did cross a state line. Like, that's some big deal nowadays. But he wasn't carrying a weapon. The weapon was already in Wisconsin. He was lawfully able to possess it in Wisconsin. That's why the judge threw out the charge of being a minor in possession. He wasn't a militia member. There's certainly no evidence introduced of that. And he didn't shoot peaceful protesters. He shot three extremely violent people who tried to kill him. But that media narrative is out there. It will never go away. And that has framed the case for political purposes that this is white supremacy on trial here. So you have Black Lives Matter protesters out there claiming racism for a white kid who shot three white people, has nothing to do with race, yet that's what it's turned into. And because of that, this has become a cause célèbre for the left that this kid needs to be convicted. And the facts, though, show that it was clearly self-defense. I don't know what's taking the jury so long. Hopefully it's not a sign that they're going to convict him, because the evidence is just absolutely overwhelming that this was self-defense.
But the jurors live in the community, obviously. And do you think that they're afraid of what's going to happen? You know, what happened the last time with their town burning down, and that would, cloud their judgment?
Well, they might deny it, but I think it's hanging over. It's hanging over just like it was in the prosecution of Derek Chauvin, where there were, armed troops surrounding the courthouse. How can that not influence a juror? Where there was, in the George Floyd case, a congresswoman calling for riots and protests if there's a not guilty verdict. And the same thing is happening here. At least I don't believe any, congressmen have made that claim. But, he's been called a white supremacist by the president, now president of the United States. So this has to be hanging on the jurors, that they know if there's a not guilty, they come to court. They probably see the protesters outside. They are not sequestered. Protesters outside the courtroom with courthouse with bullhorns, they've got to hear this. They've got to know what's going to happen. They might say it's not going to impact them, but the mere fact that they'd be thinking about it has to have an effect on things.
Well, I can understand why the pro-looter crowd, you know, looting is symbolic taking, as Nicole Hannah-Jones characterizes it. I can understand because they're used to being able to force politicians to capitulate or expose the cowardice of politicians who do capitulate and direct their police force to stand down when cities are laid siege to, as happened all over America last year, including in Kenosha. And so, you know, they don't like when a private citizen takes it upon himself to do what the civilian political authorities won't do, in a sense, to try to protect private property and to try to protect private citizens. But it seems to me that if Rittenhouse were convicted based on the arguments, as muddled as they were, offered by the prosecution, that would be a serious precedent in diminishment of people's understanding of self-defense and their likelihood to defend themselves.
I think that's absolutely true. If you can't defend yourself when someone's beating you in the head with a skateboard, if you can't defend yourself when they're running at you while you're on the ground and they lower their Glock pistol towards your head from 3 feet away, if you can't defend yourself when someone who's already that night threatened to kill you if he caught you alone and is now reaching for your gun, if you can't defend yourself in those circumstances and the full weight of the state and the full weight of the media is going to come down on you, then we are in a really bad place. And I think that's why the left and the media, which are one and the same, have focused so heavily on this. They do not want people to be able to defend themselves. They want to defund the police. They want to let mobs run the streets. And they don't want citizens to be able to defend themselves. That's what this case has become.
Yeah, I mean, lest we forget, you know, former Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens, it was just a couple of years ago, he wrote an op-ed in the New York Times calling for the repeal of the Second Amendment. And, of course, that's the operative position of the entire collection of the left.
That's what this is all about, and that's why they're so heavily focused on it. You don't see this sort of media attention for other cases that don't involve self-defense, don't involve what they perceive to be a racial element, even though there is none here. That's what this is all about. This is about citizens not being able to defend themselves because the police are nowhere to be found. They were nowhere to be found during the rioting in Kenosha. They were on the edges. Everybody was left for themselves. And there were violent, violent people like this multiple child rapist, Joseph Rosenbaum, who got shot. When he tried to grab Kyle Rittenhouse's gun, this violent, violent person who has a long criminal history and was out looking to beat people that night. So, you know, those people are allowed to run the streets. Those people won't be arrested. But somebody who defends themselves against those criminals is going to get arrested. And that's the way the left wants it. They want people intimidated. They want them cowed into fear. They want them to be able to be manipulated. And that's why this case has become so important.
And have you noticed that Rosenbaum's family and Huebner's family, they're not in the courtroom. They're not talking to reporters saying, you know, Rittenhouse killed my child or killed my son or killed, you know, my brother, that they've remained pretty much silent during this whole process.
Well, you know, everybody's entitled to, you know, protection of the criminal laws, even a criminal like Rosenbaum. But, you know, the world is a better place that that child rapist, violent person is not in it. Mm. And he was killed lawfully. He doesn't deserve to be killed unlawfully, but he was killed while trying to kill somebody else.
And the other argument that's been made by op-ed writers of the left and so forth, you know, Rittenhouse, he shouldn't have been there. He had no business being there. Well, first of all, whether he should or shouldn't have been there is immaterial to whether or not he defended himself under the law. But secondly, so he is not allowed to go to Kenosha and protect private property. But those that descended on Kenosha from all over the country, they're perfectly within their rights to do so.
That's where we are in society right now, is that looters are more protected than the people who protect property and protect themselves.
Yeah, and I'm so sick of the whole thing. You know, he crossed state lines too. He worked in Kenosha, well, Mount Pleasant at the rec center there as a lifeguard. It's in his dad lived there. So, I, you know, people in New York, don't you go to New Jersey a lot? You know, it's not like it's a big deal to go 10 minutes away.
You know, I live in Rhode Island. I can't throw a stone without crossing a state line because we're so small. This notion, how hysterical is this? The people who want open borders on the Mexican border. All of a sudden, you know, the sanctity of the border between Illinois and Wisconsin. How ridiculous is this?
Wisconsin should build a wall for a lot of reasons. I want to get your take on something else, too. These continuing revelations per the Merrick Garland memo about parents at school board members being a matter of concern for federal law enforcement. Well, now we have a development, not just a memo indicating that EDU officials file has been set up within the FBI and counterterrorism group, in addition to another division within the Department of Justice, are, you know, actively soliciting potential cases. That's number one. Number two, we have Southlake, Texas, the U.S. Education Department's Civil Rights Enforcement Arm investigating allegations of discrimination at the Carroll Independent School in Southlake, Texas. For people who forgot, Southlake, Texas was all the rage before Loudoun County was, with a fight over critical race theory in the curriculum. And they turned over their school board in Southlake, Texas, and got rid of all the school board members who were promoting critical race theory as part of the curriculum. And now that school and that school board are being investigated by the Education Department.
You know, one of the things that scares Democrats more than anything is this parents' movement, because it is a multiracial movement. It crosses political lines. It is a parents' movement. So they have been unsuccessful in stopping it by doing their usual tactics of falsely calling people racist, et cetera, et cetera. That hasn't worked. That hasn't slowed it down. So now they have brought in the heavy artillery. They have they're trying to designate this movement as domestic terrorists. That's the term that the National School Board Association used to in their letter to the FBI. The FBI jumped on it within 4 days, which almost certainly means it was pre-planned. Nobody moves that quickly. It just doesn't happen. Somebody writes a letter to the FBI or to the Department of Justice, and all of a sudden, the FBI is on the case. That doesn't happen, particularly where there's been no actual violence. What we're talking about are, you know, the sort of unfortunate threats that happen whenever anybody enters the political realm. But there's been no violence at these school boards. The only violence that's happened is occasionally someone will get upset when their microphone is cut off or something like that, and they're usually just escorted out by local police. There's no need for the federal government to be involved other than to intimidate people. And that's exactly what Merrick Garland, who should resign. He's unfit to be attorney general. Thank God he's not on the Supreme Court. He needs to resign because he has been a participant in the use of the FBI and the Department of Justice for political intimidation. Everybody knows it.
He is Professor William Jacobson, clinical professor of law and director of the Securities Law Clinic at Cornell Law School, founder of LegalInsurrection.com and president of the Legal Insurrection Foundation. Professor Jacobson, thanks again for joining us.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com.